What is left to do at the U.S. Supreme Court in 2015? Plenty. The big cases get decided last, and that's certainly the case this term. Eric Citron, he's a partner at Goldstein & Russell, a leading Supreme Court firm and a specialist in appellate practice. He's also a former clerk to Justices Sandra Day O'Connor and Elena Kagan. Citron says the unpredictability of this court might best be seen in the capital punishment case Glossop v. Gross.
The death penalty has fallen out of public debate, but it is at the heart of one that division that's run through the court, and it was a very contentious oral argument. In part because the actual issue in the case is whether a new drug that's being used as the first of three drugs in a three drug protocol is adequate to the task. But the conservative justices on the court really view the effort to attack this particular protocol as an attack head on the death penalty. And so it was a very contentious oral argument. Mm-hmm. I think it's hard to predict what will happen, but the court is locked in a scientific debate that it probably doesn't feel too comfortable in, and is mostly deciding whether or not it wants to meddle in how the states try to conduct the death penalty, or whether to say basically we said the death penalty is constitutional and the states will have to figure it out. There certainly is a wing on the court that doesn't feel that way, and so that could be as contentious as any case the court has to decide.
Well, we'll see how they wade out of the science and the states' rights implications there. How about King v. Burwell, which is the case that the administration calls a technicality on the Obamacare law, the Affordable Care Act. But in fact, in oral arguments, it was very, very contentious, and it seems like there's way more than meets the eye here.
Sure, there's an enormous amount at stake over a very small provision in the law. The dispute is about whether or not states that don't set up their own exchanges to facilitate the healthcare law nonetheless get subsidies for their citizens if they can't afford the full price of healthcare. The way the law is written, it seems on its very face to suggest that the subsidies are available to a state that sets up its own exchange, an exchange set up by the state, I think is the term in the statute. But the federal government fills in for lots of the states when they haven't set up their own exchange, and it seems like the manifest intention of the law was to provide subsidies for everybody. I mean, it is called the Affordable Care Act, and we all know it as part of the universal health care debate. It's quite possible that the court will decide that only states that have set up their own exchanges get the subsidies, in which case a very large number of citizens are going to have trouble claiming the subsidies on their tax returns from the IRS. At oral argument, it seemed that Justice Kennedy, who's the court's swing vote, was very concerned about the consequences of reading the statute that way, because it will, among other things, really undermine the private insurance regime in those states, because private insurers are counting on the subsidies to maintain the market now that they have to provide universal insurance to people with pre-existing conditions.
It seems as though the sentiment on the part of the community in support of same-sex marriages believes that Obergefell v. Hodges is going to represent some huge milestone. And that may be the case, but it seems to me that this court is not interested particularly in big, broad milestone precedents, and that the divisions on this court may mean that this will be a much narrower decision. What do you believe?
Well, I think you're absolutely right to say that this court has been interested in taking small steps on basically every issue. I think the question when it comes to same-sex marriage is whether all the small steps have already been taken. And so there may not be much left for the court to do other than say that it is, in fact, discriminatory for courts to exclude gay and lesbian couples from marriage, for states to do that. And so I think their love of baby steps notwithstanding, this may be the last step that they have left.
Eric Citron is a partner at Goldstein & Russell. He's also a former clerk to Justices Sandra Day O'Connor and Elena Kagan, and a guest contributor to the SCOTUS blog. Thanks so much for talking with us.
Thank you.